the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
So joining us for the week trending here in the studio in Dublin, Aoife Barry is with us, broadcaster and author, and joining us from Cork, Joe O'Shea, the editor of Cork Bio. Now, a story that we didn't expect to be covering involves Ryan Tuberty, the former RTE presenter. This afternoon made a statement in which he said, "Earlier today I made a payment of €150,000 to RTE. I made this payment through my solicitor without any discussions with RTE or with anyone acting on their behalf and without condition. I have said on various occasions that I intended making this payment and I'm happy to have been able to do so today." Okay. Joe O'Shea, will you remind us of the fuss of 2 years ago, and in particular the circumstances of this €150,000 payment which he's announced today?
Yeah, well, it was one of the most extraordinary scandals in Irish broadcasting history, and of course most people will remember it. It came out basically that Tuberty had been paid two instalments of €75,000 by RTE. This was on top of his salary, which I think was around €420,000 at the time, annual salary. Now, the payments were sort of made to top up his salary, so to speak, to give him an extra bit on top. And they were paid into what was called a barter account at the time. And he was being paid to make public appearances for Renault, which was the main sponsor of the Late Late Show at the time. Now, he did actually make one kind of promotional sort of appearance for Renault, you know, hosting some event for them. He didn't do a second and third event that he was supposed to do. But the sums weren't in the RTE's annual accounts as salary payments. They were sort of in a, let's be, how do we put this, a grey area, you know, a kind of extra expenditure. And when it came out, it, as we remember, it kind of kicked off a firestorm that eventually ended up with Tuberty agreeing to take a huge pay cut at the time. And it seemed that it had been sorted out. And then there were further comments made. And then it basically, RT said, okay, that's it. This has to end. We're ending it here. And effectively, Tuberty had to, you know, leave and move to London, where he got a job with Virgin Radio on a far reduced salary. So, I mean, it had kind of died down a bit, but now it's back in the news, obviously, today, which is a fairly extraordinary statement from Ryan Tuberty.
And if Barry, the RTE Director General, Kevin Backhurst, back in 2023, said it might not be possible to recover the money on a legal basis, but had he believed there was a moral case for Ryan Tuberty to make the repayment. If the deal had been, no matter how controversial it was, if it had been legal, why then would he actually make the repayment?
Yeah, I suppose it's a good question on the fact that it is happening, what, nearly 2 years or so after, over 2 years after it all kicked off. Was it March or 3 years?
Oh, no, it was June of 2023.
So 2 years or thereabouts. Yeah, I think there's an interesting element with Ryan Tuberty that he is someone who positions himself as very much of a gentleman who, you know, behaves a certain way. He is someone who I think would feel that it was supposed to be beneficial for him to do that. Now, I'm not saying it's just purely because he wants to look good or anything like that, but I think he would see, okay, I have been told it would look good from a moral standpoint for me to do this, even if legally there's not the pressure on me. Therefore, I want to kind of wrap this up. I want to end it. I don't want any questions lingering over whether or not I was ever going to repay this. I'm going to actually repay it. He was obviously making enough money, you know, plenty of money when he was working for RTE, so it wasn't a question of whether or not he had the money in the bank necessary to pay it.
Well, we don't know that.
Well,
and actually, we also don't know what the tax situation on this is, because you would have assumed that he would have paid tax on this, which makes you wonder that then, is he seriously out of pocket, having paid tax on the 150,000 when he got it, now to repay the 150,000 as well as having paid the tax on it? He's probably never going to tell us.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to speculate about people's bank accounts when it's, you know, like when he's no longer working for the national broadcaster. But like, so I literally do not know what the situation is. We can only speculate. For me, when people do these kind of public statements. It's not like he did it and then didn't say anything publicly. I think the key is that he came out and said, I am doing this and I am happy to do it. There is a kind of a sense of a reputational idea of, look at what I am doing. I want to be the person who comes out of this with a clean slate, and I don't want there to be questions over whether or not I would have ever paid that. And I do think it was interesting for Kevin Backhurst to put the word moral in there, because that puts a lot of pressure on the other person. It says, if you don't do this, perhaps you're doing something that is immoral. And the idea also, or the questions at the time when they were kind of before the government committees, and it was kind of this really long, drawn out, intense period where there's a huge amount of pressure put on Tubridy, huge amount of pressure put on RT, and a lot of questions of what really is going on with the money here, who is getting paid, why is this barter account exist? So there was a lot of questions and speculation, and I suppose perhaps, again, I'm only guessing from Tubridy's point of view, this is drawing some form of a line and saying, well, you know what, here is this money that there was all of this kind of kerfuffle and speculation, and rightly all of these questions about. So for him, perhaps it is some sort of a line being drawn. But like you say, it is out of the blue and it is 2 years after it, so I don't know what the situation is.
Well, actually, that's what one listener says. Why did it take him so long to repay it? Does he want us to thank him? And then you have listeners making comments like, one, maybe Ryan wants a clean slate so he can run for president. Another one says, I'm wondering if Mr. Tubridy has his sights now set on Áras an Uachtaráin, that's Gráinne in County Cork. Because in fairness, Joe, when he stepped down for the Late Late Show, before this story emerged in June 2023, there were people wondering if he had his sights on a run for the presidency, that he had developed such a big reputation during his time on the Late Late Show. He intended to continue on the radio show on a reduced salary, but that he wanted to use perhaps the time after leaving the Late Late Show to prepare himself for the potential of running this time around, because he comes from a very political family. Fianna Fáil.
And he's a person who's very interested in politics as well. And I think that would, something like the Áras would be something of a dream for him in terms of his interest in Irish history and his interest in Irish politics, of course. I think he's the type of person that I can't claim to know him very well, but I have spend some time in his company. I think he's a person that has a very strong moral sense as well. And I can see him thinking, I'm going to have to do this, because to draw a line under it and to sort of display or show to people that, I want to do the right thing, that I'm planning to do the right thing. There's also the case as well that, it's a big chunk, it's not an insignificant amount of money for him, because according to the kind of what I have seen and what he's earning with Virgin in London is nowhere near what he was on RTE. There are some kind of reports saying it might be in region of €90,000, something like that. So €150,000 is quite a lot of money. And maybe he's thinking I will be going home in the near future. Maybe he wants to come back to Dublin. Maybe he wants to work in Ireland again. And this would be something that he might feel he has to do before he can come back.
Well, indeed, I think, Aoife, that's what a lot of people are speculating. Does this mean he wants to, having had his time abroad, wants to come back? I haven't spoken to Ryan Tubridy since this whole thing happened. I ran into him once at a party last year that was been hosted by, we have an agent in common, Noel Kelly Management. I saw him in the corner of the room. I waved, said hello, but I didn't have a conversation with him. So I don't know what it is that he's doing. But there's been a lot of speculation recently, but there actually have been reports that he has become engaged to be married. So maybe he wants to come back and live in Ireland again and feels that he needs to get this out of the way.
Maybe so. And I mean, I think that's a very, like I was saying a minute ago, I do think it's a strong, possibility. And like Joe was saying too, of him kind of drawing a line there, because let's not forget as well, he was such a huge, and is still, but particularly was such a huge figure in Irish kind of popular culture on Irish television, on radio. People will remember him on presenting The Full Irish. And then of course he goes on and presents The Late Late later in his career. And he's someone who always had a reputation as this kind of upstanding person and this, kind of very gentlemanly. Anybody who's met him in person will know he's almost kind of old-fashioned gentleman in a way. So I can see how that wouldn't that would very much jar with then what happened in terms of the kind of the controversy a couple of years ago over all of these payments. It was such a shock because it was completely at odds to the public reputation of Ryan Tubridy. And maybe he does want to come home. Maybe he wants to kind of get back here, start afresh, and feel as well, I want to kind of get all my ducks in a row before I do that. And it is possible for people's reputations to change for the positive. Not everybody gets cancelled these days.
And Joe, this listener says the €750 million bailout that RTE will receive from the government over 3 years is simply crazy. By contrast, the money involving Ryan Tuberty is irrelevant. And there are a lot of people who actually have felt that, Joe, that it actually masked a much deeper malaise in RTE, something that many critics feel hasn't actually been sorted out.
Of course, well, we know it hasn't been sorted out because there's still ongoing, you know, court or at least battles or controversy about, you know, whether people being on contract, being working there for years, but being classed as freelance. Tuberty, in a way, ended up becoming a lightning rod and kind of like everything focused in on him, whereas you could argue that what was going on with him was just part of what was going on across RT in a much kind of larger way, you know, that it was institutional and that in some respects RT got kind of lucky that all of the focus was on their most famous presenter. So it's fascinating because what happens next, though, if he does come home, it is interesting. How will the Irish public take to him? You know, will he be forgiven, so to speak? And who could he end up working for? Because you couldn't really see him going back to RTE.
Well, there are listeners who are texting into 0874 100 102 who said they'd like to see him back on the Late Late Show.
I think there's a really big thing in Ireland where if we really love a public figure, we will forgive them of a lot. I mean, we see figures like Bertie Ahern, who some people would love to see him in the Oran.
There are people texting in as well saying that whatever about Ryan Tuberty, they'd vote for Ryan Tuberty before they'd vote for Bertie Ahern.
I know, that's true too. But I honestly do think sometimes it surprises me the very short memories that people have. I'm not comparing the two of those men in any shape or form, but I'm saying that like I do think that people have very short memories and that some people actually, you know, there is that sense sometimes in Ireland, we're sure he's a good chap. And listen, he said sorry, so let's move on.
And a listener says, at some point we will look back with embarrassment at how Ryan Tuberty was hunted out of Ireland for very little wrongdoing in his part. He became the most publicly recognisable figure who was cancelled and for nothing. Joe.
You could make that argument very strongly. Like I said, he almost became the lightning rod. He was kind of almost like the human shield for RTE with what happened and what is a much deeper and wider issue or was with the public, with the national public broadcaster. I think as well that the fact that he went into exile, so to speak, that Irish people will also kind of go, well, you know, he did his time. He had to go away. He was in exile. I think people would actually, I think there's there will be a welcome back. I think more people would like to see him come back than actually would be against it.
I think as well, just to say very quickly, that when it comes to controversies, you know, the three of us here as journalists will have seen that when it comes to big controversy, that it's very easy to latch on to certain narratives and that it's actually quite difficult to latch on to complicated, nuanced stories. People often want a baddie and the goodie and they want this to have happened very simply. And actually a situation like the RTE one, well, some elements of it weren't that complicated, some elements of it continue to be complicated, and that it is often good, I think, as a viewer of these things to step back and say, okay, what's actually really happening here beyond the obvious that I'm being kind of told is the main story.
A lot of support for Ryan Tuberty coming into 0874 100 102. Let's hear a segment from Fox News this week. And this covered US and EU migration policies, and Ireland was used as an example of bad policies with plenty of misinformation, fake news in this particular segment.
If we take a look at a country like Ireland, we can begin to connect some dots. Ireland last year is seeing its biggest population surge since 2008, largely due to positive net migration. The country also seeing, by the way, a rise in crime. It's even more pronounced in the city of Dublin, where murder and assault attempts are surging. This from a city that was once one of the safest cities in the world. It now ranks among the top 10 most dangerous cities in Europe.
Aoife, amongst the top 10 most dangerous cities in Europe, says who other than Fox fake news?
Well, you know, if you trust the source being Europe Nightlife Index Casinos, then if you trust them, according to their study for an online betting guide that came out a number of years ago, then of course you'll believe that's true. But I think anybody with any sense will look into that and say that doesn't sound like correct statistics to me. And I think anybody who's been paying attention to a lot of the misinformation being spread on this topic online will recognise that the two headlines that were used in Fox News in that clip, and you can see the video of it online, are like frequently used as part of a kind of a misinformation push. One is from 2003, The Examiner. One is from the Sunday World, again referencing that, you know, very questionable sourced study there. And that is often used by people to try and claim that Dublin and indeed Ireland is extremely unsafe, particularly Dublin. And it's been debunked. You know, it's something that's floating around there a lot. And the fact that they at Fox actually use this particular one, which is very easy to debunk, tells you all that you need to know, really, that there is no kind of oversight here of the information in terms of whether or not it's actually correct. And the person that they had on is a guy called Douglas Murray. He's not from Ireland. He is a conservative commentator who has a very certain perspective, which ties in with the Fox perspective, which is that essentially what they're trying to say there are that rising immigration rates to Ireland. And they don't break down those rates or anything like that. And those immigration rates include people from Ireland moving back to Ireland, by the way, if you look at the CSA. So they connect that to a purported rise in violence in Dublin. So it's real dog whistles that are going on there.
But Joe O'Shea, isn't it the case that Dublin does have problems and that there has been a widespread perception has developed that the place has become unsafe? That, for example, is why we had a task force set up by the government in the wake of the riots of 2.5 years ago.
Dublin does have problems and Ireland does have problems, but they're not with violent crime, because the statistics show actually violent crime is going down and murder rates are going down. Where we have problems is with antisocial behaviour and serious problems that we've completely failed to get to grips with. But what this Fox thing is complete, it's made up. I mean, it's what statisticians refer to as utter bollocks, basically.
Sorry for the
technical term there. But like, I run a digital news site. And we get five of these every day from various gambling companies, you know, the five most romantic places to visit in Ireland for engagement proposals. And what they'll do is they'll highlight the region you're in and say, oh, Cork's the most... I know that people in Galway are getting another survey that says Galway is. And you're supposed to use these, but you have to include a link, a click-through link to the gambling site. So it's garbage statistics. It's all garbage. But there's a very good piece in the Financial Times, I think, yesterday, talking about Trump's phony TV scare campaign. And they were doing it with Sweden, by the way, a few years ago. Stockholm was a no-go area and Islamists were running wild in the streets. And what they did,
Stockholm's one of the safest cities I've ever walked through with my family.
I know, there is a kernel of truth here that there has been a rise in serious gang problems in Stockholm. And it's very complicated, but it is to do with new populations arriving and they took in a lot of refugees and they'd integrate. But what they do is they take a sort of like a certain, you know, one kind of statistic or one phenomenon, they blow it up into this, you know, Dublin is now the most dangerous city in Europe to go to. And the reason why they pick on Dublin, by the way, they pick on Ireland, by the way, is well, is because there's a huge Irish American population in the States. They know it will chime with them. And also what they can say is, you know, lovely Ireland where you go and it's all castles and people running around in woolly jumpers. Well, no, that's terrifying because of immigration. See, it's happening and it's going to come for you next. It's a scare campaign and it's complete garbage.
I think it also raises issues as well, I think, for reporters and for journalists, because you're looking at news headlines, which people would see as a primary-ish source of information and a solid source of information they can trust, using that within the sphere of misinformation. And I think that's really worrying for media literacy, because I think most people would look at a headline in a newspaper, especially very reputable newspapers, because I'm not saying that you know, they're not reputable, but they'd look at something and they'd say, okay, this newspaper headline tells me XYZ, therefore I must trust this because I believe this is a reputable Irish source of news. But then they might not realise that behind that might be, you know, kind of questionable statistical details that were sent to a particular newspaper, or there just might be more context there that's missing. Like, a headline is always on its own with no other information is going to be missing context. So I think these days we tend to find that people are getting thrown out by all of these things because they're seeking very quick, fast information that's kind of got that confirmation bias, and they'll say, I saw a headline in a newspaper and this confirms what I believe. So it really highlights major issues for media literacy.
We have a lot of American tourists who come to the country every year. We're going to have a major influx in 2 weeks' time for the college's American football game. Again in September, when we have the big NFL game, which is going to be played in Croke Park. I hope that every American who comes will be safe and that they'll enjoy their time here. I suspect the vast majority will. Unfortunately, there might be one or two incidents that take place. That happens whenever you have big events on. But I think if you look at the history of Americans being attacked in Ireland in recent years, I think it's our own locally born and bred gougers, Joe, who were responsible for some of the most feral attacks, not immigrants to this country.
No, I mean, you know, there's been a big debate recently in the UK about, you know, do more immigrants mean more crime? What we know internationally is that immigrants actually are proportionally less likely to carry out crime, mostly because they're too busy trying to build their new lives.
They're too busy
working,
and getting better jobs and actually trying to make a life for themselves to get away from where they've been.
Exactly. Now, the problem is if an American tourist does get mugged in Dublin, let's say for the college games in 2 weeks' time, Fox News will be all over that as, see, we told you, it's dangerous, it's, you know. So it's very hard to fight against this kind of stuff because it's confirmation bias, as Aoife said. This is the picture they want to paint of Ireland. And, you know, one thing we could do is push back against it. The government could actually take out ads in the US, in the media over there, on Fox News, and say, these are the current crime statistics for Ireland, you know, and actually kind of push back against that. There's no reason why we can't do that, and I think we actually should do it.
I think one of the issues with this also is that it's very hard to fight very basic misinformation with nuanced facts, and that people, when they go towards misinformation and when they believe things like, oh, you can't walk down O'Connell Street because it's the most dangerous street in Ireland, and listen, I walk down up and down O'Connell Street nearly every day, like, it's as dangerous as it's ever been, grand. It's completely fine in many respects. The people will go for these kind of easy to understand stories, they'll believe these kind of simple facts, and the truth is that there is some violence in Dublin. There's a lot of nuanced reasons as to why there is. Every city. If I go to America, I could be at risk too, obviously. But what I'm saying is there's nuanced reasons behind the causes of this violence or causes of antisocial behaviour that have to do with socioeconomic issues, social issues, government policy, etc. But people necessarily in these days don't always have the time or the will to sit down and think about these things and read about them. That's why it's really important for people to have fact checkers, to seek out this information. But I think it's very hard to fight a torrent of very basic misinformation.
Let me give you some basic information. There's a Twitter account, or X account, run by somebody called Danny Boy, which is very good in tackling misinformation online. And he pointed out that in 2023, there were 12 murders in the Dublin metropolitan region. The following year, 13. So an increase in 1 on 12 is not a 114% increase like Fox News claimed. Also, 13 murders in a population of 2.1 million people is one of the lowest rates in the world. And actually, the numbers are actually falling over the years as well. And there are many other stats in relation to that. Meanwhile, back in America, Joe, we have the former Superman actor Dean Cain. Becoming one of the ICE thugs. Let's actually just hear him explain that.
Our ICE agents, who are amazing men and women, incredible, and they're black and they're brown and they're green and they're yellow and they're Japanese and they're whatever, they're a cross-section of Americans, they are doing their job, the job that Congress wrote the laws for them to support and uphold, and they're doing the jobs of deporting people who are here illegally. If you're a legal citizen here in this country, no worries. You're great, but if you're here illegally, you've broken the law to begin with, whatever the circumstances are, you've had multiple opportunities to self-deport, and the fact that these men and women who are doing their jobs are getting vilified, I had to stand up with them and for them, because I think it takes a people standing up to change the culture.
I'm amazed, actually, Joe, that he knows the colour of all of the ICE employees, because I thought most of them hid behind masks when they went doing their work.
And of course, he says, if you're an American citizen, you've nothing to worry about. But there have been multiple cases of American citizens getting scooped up, brutalized, and in some cases sent off to a prison in El Salvador. So this is on the Jesse Waters show, which again is Fox News. And Dean Cain, there's a kind of a strange subsection of celebrities in America, mostly who haven't worked since 1994, who are kind of like carved out this kind of grifter kind of culture where they can, you know, I'm MAGA, you know, and it kind of revives their careers and gets them in front of the cameras again. Dean Cain being a complete kind of a great example of this is another clown.
Wasn't he out recently given out that Superman, the latest movie, was too woke and it was anti-American?
Because Superman's an immigrant, like he is an immigrant. You know,
and actually, the original Superman comics were all about Superman being kind to people.
And written by people I think it was two Jewish men wrote the...
Two Jewish guys.
Yeah, so there's a really interesting history behind it about immigration and you know, racism and everything like that, anti-Semitism. So But I mean, that's context that Dean Cain doesn't care about. Like, Dean Cain only cares about bad versus good, good guys versus bad guys. He doesn't care that, like Joe was saying, even if you are an American citizen, if you don't look like the right kind of American citizen, you can be shipped off to wherever ICE wants you to be shipped off. Like, these people like Dean Cain and Dr. Phil, who also showed up at these sorts of events where ICE is making a spectacle out of people, you know, all they are the kind of people who are the least at risk in their mind of anything like this happening to them. And they're incapable of empathizing with people who are most at risk. And that's the bit that I'm constantly shocked at, that people cannot kind of sit, like, look in their ivory tower down at people and realize, like, this could be anybody, this could be me, this could be anybody else. Instead, they think, this would never happen to me, ergo, I have the right to allow this to happen to other people. It's a complete kind of breakdown of the kind of human contract, the civil contract. And we're watching this happen in front of us. People are literally watching people being torn off the streets in front of them. And it's just like a really vain, vapid approach to humanity, I think, to be doing this.
We need to take a break. We will be back with more with Aoife Barry and Joe O'Shea after this. More with The Week Trending with Aoife Barry and Joe O'Shea. And who amongst you has ever had a relationship with an AI chatbot? Aoife?
Not me. I try to not use, I'm one of the rare dissenters. I don't use ChatGPT yet. So it's probably a whole segment of that. But according to a survey of 1,000 adults, almost 10% of adults in Ireland have had a romantic relationship with an AI chatbot within the last 12 months. Now, I am one of those people who's hugely sceptical about the results of this particular this survey's research. It was carried out by telecoms, broadband and telecoms provider Pure Telecom. They claim another 12% of those 1,000 people wouldn't rule out such a relationship in the future. What really got to me about this was kind of the wording around it, and it almost felt like it was an inevitability that we would have these relationships with AI chatbots, and this sense that, oh, AI is here to stay, we have to accept this is going to happen, isn't it great that people can have a relationship with chatbots? Whereas I think that this sort of uncritical depiction of AI and AI relationships is quite worrying, and it kind of ushers into this era where you are somehow like a Luddite if you question, like, maybe actually this is something we need to have a deeper talk about. And maybe when we think about things like the loneliness epidemic, which is a real thing, the solution isn't for people to turn to AI chatbots. And, you know, we should also be looking at the companies that have created these AI chatbots and ask why we should be saying things like AI has a pivotal role in our society when it's been kind of ushered in without a lot of people's consent, effectively.
That said, Joe, an AI chatbot is likely to be very nice to you all of the time, isn't it?
That's part of the problem, unfortunately. Yep. There's been cases in the US where people have had very serious mental health breakdowns because they think they're talking to an AI chatbot that is very friendly and you know, listens to them. But unfortunately, the algorithms, you know, are tweaked to kind of get you addicted in some way. They're tweaked to kind of establish a relationship, but a very unhealthy one. There's been cases in the US with people having to have had very serious mental health interventions because of their unhealthy relationships with AI bots, you know? I mean, you can't just get a dog. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with that, rather than talking to an AI bot.
Hang on, a lot of apartment-owned blocks, they won't let you have a pet these days.
It says a lot about, I think a lot of these issues that we're talking about are connected in the sense it says a lot about the society we live in and the gaps that are there in terms of what people need, how people are treated, how we treat each other. And sometimes with the idea of an AI chatbot being this very safe space for you to go, the question there is, okay, well, what's missing there in your own personal life that perhaps, you know, is missing because of society? Issues that could have helped you that you maybe perhaps don't need to strike up a relationship with an AI chatbot. And I think those are the kind of conversations that we're not necessarily having, and we're instead listening to the kind of tech overlords telling us, well, AI will change everything and it'll either be terrible or brilliant. And actually we need to be thinking about how do we have these kind of proper relationships with these AI products in a way that we don't forget to look at what we also need in a proper society for us all to be able to kind of, you know, have a happy life, and not, like Joe was saying, have people who have to have mental health kind of interventions because of their relationships, which indicates a deeper problem, unfortunately, with that poor person who needs supports around them.
Listener here says the Japanese tried this already, where having robots in the home was supposed to be good for loneliness, so went the other way and became destructive. Joe, you love a good murder story, I know.
Yeah.
So go to Australia for me, because we had the story recently of Erin Patterson, who poisoned three of her in-laws, murdered them with a meal of toxic mushrooms. But there's more revelations after coming out that she was a serial poisoner.
Well, this is
not breakfast cereal, but never mind.
Well, she probably used that as well. The wonderfully alliterative Melbourne mushroom murderer. More has come out about her, and this is extraordinary stuff. And apparently, because you would have thought that, you know, the most extraordinary part of this story would be that she had a falling out with her husband and her in-laws. She invited them to a dinner which they did not want to go to, and she fed them a meal of toxic mushrooms, basically chopped up in the meal.
Yeah, inside the beef Wellington. They probably didn't even realise.
Yeah, they didn't realise. We're getting a death cap mushrooms. So she killed her father-in-law, her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law's sister. But it turns out after the case ended that the judge unsealed, so to speak, evidence that wasn't allowed to be heard in the original case. And it turns out that she had made several attempts to kill her husband. But not only that, he knew she was trying to kill him because he made the first attempt on his life in 2021. He got very, very ill. 2022, she tried again. So he kind of, he said, after the first time I got sick, I had the idea I was getting sick from Aaron's food. So he started a spreadsheet of all of the times that he was nearly killed by his wife's food. So, I don't know, to collect evidence in case he finally went. He kept going back and eating again. So there was a sandwich wrap, a chicken curry, penne bolognese. This all happened in the run-up to that meal where his parents were killed and his aunt was killed.
Would he not have warned his parents and his aunt?
He did. What? He actually said to them he believed he was being poisoned. Yeah.
He tried to warn them. And they didn't listen. And they all went to the meal thinking there's a chance she could try to poison us here. And when they did get sick, they presented themselves at the hospital, A&E, with they took samples. This is a bit disgusting, but samples of their own vomit, so to speak. And they handed them to the doctors and said, "Here, we think we've been poisoned. Examine that."
Okay. Can we move on to the Drumshambo Festival, which has been stopped after a petition? What's involved in this, Aoife?
Yeah, so there's a controversial music festival that was supposed to be taking place in an event called the Mayflower Community Centre in Drumshambo. And it became very controversial because there are allegations that this music festival had people taking part in that had far-right views. And there was actually a far-right rally that was planned in Cork for the same day that was reported to be set to be cancelled to allow people to travel to this festival. I saw a lot of people on my
own... This is the Misha Era
Festival. The Misha Era Festival, sorry. The Misha Era Festival, due to be held on the 23rd of August, and the Mayflower Community Centre in the end decided not to hold it after there was an open letter signed by people, and the open letter was run by the Leitrim and Roscommon Against Fascism organisation, and you know, members of the organisation were speaking out in local media about their concerns. There was an apology read out in local media as well about comments made about John Waters, who's one of the people supposed to be speaking at this event, and a lot of people I follow myself in the music scene in the area were extremely concerned about what was supposed to be happening at this festival. There was a lot of concerns locally about the topics that are going to be discussed there, and they ended up having people like Christy Moore, Chris O'Dowd, about 600 or so very prominent Irish artists signing the open letter calling for its cancellation. So in the end it was cancelled. Now the people who were concerned were saying that the event was kind of going to be portrayed, it was being portrayed as a nice event, but they felt that it was a far right event in their mind, and that's why they raised very quickly the concerns about that. And you know, they felt that the Mayflower venue is a really lovely, you know, powerful venue in terms of the local music scene, and they didn't want to see such an event taking place and kind of potentially affecting that as well too.
Joe, there is an argument, and I see Brenda Parr was making it in the Irish Daily Mail today, that it's a bit hypocritical for this group to be signing a petition to shut down the festival when many of the same people were signing petitions on behalf of NECAP for freedom of speech.
Yeah, I mean, again, you can make that argument, and you can make that argument strongly. But I think part of the problem here is that NECAP, you know what NECAP represent, right? And they make no secret about it. I feel sorry for the Mayflower Community Centre, because what's happening a lot, and because of this far-right stuff is so new to Ireland, what you get is people will kind of like book places, and it's happened quite a lot, and say, we're having a family music festival. And they go, okay, great, send us the deposit, and away you go. And what happens then is you get people coming in who are not having a family music festival or any kind of thing like that. You're getting people who are coming in and they're involved in some really nasty stuff, and stuff that we've seen in Cork, including people invading our main library here and shutting it down and aggressively going after librarians in their library and being out in the street, and in something that I saw myself and that the guards investigated a guy being dragged out, a counter-protester being dragged out of a wheelchair by two guys wrapped in the Irish flag. So unfortunately, yeah, you have, listen, you've got the right, if you want to stand on a street corner and say whatever you want to say, then you've got the right, within boundaries, of course. But the problem here is that these people are misrepresenting themselves to the places that they try and rent out.
But is it not better just let them at it, and most people will ignore them? It'll be a small crowd, rather than drawing attention to it by calling for a boycott, which, if it was against people who are liberal or left wing, would be everyone would be up in arms about the boycott.
I think what they're not boycotting them, they're just saying you can't do that here. You can't do it in our facility, because our facility has certain ethos to it. We're a community. It's an actual community hall, and maybe that the kind of sentiments, let's say, that would be heard at these events have nothing to do with community. In fact, are anti-community and targeting certain groups in communities. So listen, if they want to do it in a field, if they want to do it, you know, wherever they can get themselves, fine. But to do it, to basically not tell the truth to the people you're renting the hall from, and then to try and go ahead with an event that is going to create division and target communities or people or groups in communities, I think that's wrong.
And I mean, if they're really good, the people were genuinely extremely concerned about what was going to be potentially discussed at this event and what it could say and what it could mean to people living in their local community who might feel maybe targeted or who might feel extremely ill at ease about it. And they're probably worried about the community centre as well too, you know, as a place that, you know, they felt that these kind of events shouldn't be happening. And I don't think it's right to compare the kneecap situation directly with this. There is a huge discussion around freedom of speech and who can say what, but the intention of those two things are completely different, and people are right to raise questions and queries about should people have a community centre to talk about potentially damaging topics.
One brief last thing, Joe. There's a lot of people, not just in America but outside America, looking forward to when Donald Trump's reign as president ends, when he should be replaced in January 2029. But I'm wondering, does he actually think he can get another 4 years?
Yeah.
Because the reports this week that he has authorised a $200 million refurbishment or extension of the ballroom at the White House. And he's paying for it and donors are paying for it. I've never known Donald Trump to pay for anything.
Yeah.
So is it? And if it's not going to be ready till after his term of office expires, he's going to pay for something he'll get no benefit out of. Is this a red flag, a clear signal that he intends, even when he's 82 years of age, to remain as president?
President Trump Jr., maybe. You know, he's going to keep it in the family.
Nah, he wants it for himself, Joe, not for his son. If he's still around,
yeah, I mean, he could probably care less about his son. There are people seriously suggesting in America now a kind of a dynasty, a Trump dynasty, with various Trumps and Trumpettes being pushed forward to kind of like fill the gap. It's extraordinary what he's doing, what he has already done to the White House. I mean, the Rose Garden is gone.
He's paved over it,
yeah.
I think there's a Joni Mitchell song that's written for that.
And then during the week, there was extraordinary sight of Trump appearing on the roof of the White House, and reporters shouting up, sir, what are you doing on the roof of the White House?
I'm trying to be Dean Cain in Superman.
jump. You know, but it's he's putting these sticking kind of gold appliques all over the doors. It's extraordinary. It's tacky. It's horrible. But maybe he does think, yeah, I'm going to build myself a lovely ballroom, because I will be here in 4 and 6 and 8 years' time, and that is pretty scary.
Yeah, another egotistical spectacle for us to all have to pay attention to while people are being dragged off the streets from behind their carts selling food. And it does really indicate that he does see himself, or at least a member of his, you know, nearest and dearest, to be in the White House in the next term, which would really, I think, make a lot of people in the US shudder. And do you know what?
A lot of them would celebrate it, and
they would.
Could be a majority if nearest and dearest gets elected.
They would, and I mean, you know, you can buy a lot of things. You can't really buy taste. I think if you look at the photos, it's interesting too. It's got that real kind of neoclassical look, and that sense of like this grandeur and like showing off the money, and it's all very much very kind of vulgar, I suppose, really, as one would expect.
Yeah, indeed. And the listener says, what about that Tim Cook of Apple blatantly dropping a gold bar base onto the glass disc that he presented Trump in the office yesterday? And it was extraordinary.
Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at these tech guys and think they're in any way behind the actual, the common person, then you've got another thing coming, because they are pandering to the likes of Trump like we wouldn't believe, and it's only going to continue as long as he's in power.
Thank you very much, Aoife Barry and Joe O'Shea, for being with us on The Week Trending.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.